We're in. Okay, going to Brazil next month? No, December?
December.
Do you basically just tell your agent, I want to go to Brazil? Let's let's make it work. Who was saying you have to go to Brazil?
So I have a lot of amazing Brazilian fans. They've been incredible since the beginning of my career. And I get requests to go out there and play shows. So it's been a while. It's been maybe like 5 or 6 years or maybe more. But yes, if I'm like, I want to go, tour Europe next year, they'll start looking and seeing what venues and what, fans want to see me. Maybe I should start suggesting things more often.
Like where you want to go on vacation. That's where you should tour. Are people in Brazil, like you see these concert movies sometimes. I think bands will shoot their concert DVD in Brazil.
They should.
Because the fans are insane.
They're the best.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Why is that? How do they respond to your music though? Because I doubt they're like moshing.
But not moshing. They're so passionate. They love music. They're so kind and like loving and warm and supportive. Like even like on my social media, they're the ones that are engaging the most and saying the sweetest things. So
really? How do you know they're from Brazil?
They say it.
They say it. They say hello from Brazil.
Obrigado. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're very wonderful.
How many dates are you doing over there?
Just three shows.
Three shows. So who do you fly with? Like your band and your team?
Band and crew. Yeah.
And that's it.
My mom and my aunt are probably going to come out. They want to go to Brazil. So
see, this is what I'm saying. This is just the excuse. You just want to go somewhere. So you tell the agent, let's go. Let's book the tour.
No, my friends are always trying to like pop on. Like I have a show in Austin tomorrow and my friends are like, can we come? We can go to dinner somewhere. I'm like,
Yeah. And then do you pay for them to come or they're on their own? Or do they just get on the bus and it's easy? They just come
We're
down.
Flying. It depends. Like sometimes if I'm like, you guys should come, like I'll book it and figure it out. If they're just like, we're cruising along, like they'll figure it
it's
out.
It's on you. Like you do it.
It just depends.
It depends. Yeah. I was watching these clips last night. I was watching this great clip of you on the Ellen Show, like so early
ago.
In your career, like right when Bubbly was, I guess, like popping off. Do you remember that? Was that crazy?
I do remember
to be on
it.
Ellen at the
it
time.
It was, and I loved her so much. I thought she was so hilarious, and I was so nervous. Like I was new. I was brand new at everything. I had a lot of stage fright. I had a lot of just like social anxiety. And so I wasn't really well prepared for it. And I just got everything happened so fast in my career. And I was on her show and I had to perform and I got to talk. And I just know for me, it was just like, what am I doing here?
Did they prep you? Did they do like interview prep? And do they say to you like, okay, this is what Ellen's going to talk to you about. These are the questions she's going to ask. Like, do you remember? Is that how it went down?
Most shows, they usually say like, these are the few questions that, whichever host is going to be asking you. But sometimes they ask the same ones. Sometimes they totally like fly off and you're like, oh, yeah. Not like it's bad, but you're like, well, I had a really good answer prepared. And so it just, you got to be on your toes.
And did Ellen have some kind of effect that calmed you down when you were so nervous going in, or like even when you were talking with her, were you still just super nervous, or did she calm your nerves?
I was still
moment?
Just nervous because it is live TV and they are like, it's a time crunch. And so I always get, if I know that they're wanting to rush, even though they're not trying to rush you, I feel like I just need to like wrap up my answers
get
quick.
Get it up.
But that's not what they want. They want you to like just express what you're saying, so that's something that I still feel like I'm learning. Like I have to remind myself, just take your time, talk slowly, tell them about yourself. It's okay.
Yeah. Was it weird when you were on Ellen and then did all your friends like go, what's going on here? Like, were they freaking out? Was it weird?
Everything at that time was just
weird.
I was on Jay Leno and all the late night shows, and I was touring with the Goo Goo Dolls, and everything incredible was happening at that time. So I think it was a whirlwind. All of our minds were kind of blown that it was happening.
Do you feel lucky that you used social media to break in the first form of MySpace? And if this was happening to you today, your whole life would have to be on social media. Back then, I imagine you didn't feel this need to document everything you were doing 24/7. And you were still having a song blow up on MySpace.
Yeah.
Do you feel lucky that you sort of blew up in that version of social media?
Extremely lucky, very grateful, especially because social media was new. I didn't even know what it was. One of my friends from high school put my song on MySpace, and because of that, everything started taking off. But I really loved it. That was a new thing for all of us. We got to post pictures and create a wallpaper and interact with people that are like apparently fans and like from all over the world. It was a really cool, unique place. Like I loved being on it. And if I didn't if that didn't happen for me, I don't know if my career would have taken off, because I, you know, just, you never know how things happen.
Yeah. Do people come to you though, like young artists now? Like, you put out a song with Ashley Cook, who's so talented. Her whole life is about posting her life on TikTok and Instagram. And she's so good.
She is.
But does she come to you and say, like, what am I doing? Or like, how'd you manage this at the time? Or like, do you have that kind of relationship?
A little bit. Like, when we see each other, she'll ask some questions, but she's doing such a great job with it. She loves it. She's great at it. She has the energy for it. And so I feel like she is really personable and interacts with her fans and loves performing. She's an incredible performer, writer, everything. But yeah, I saw her a couple weeks ago, and she just, like, yeah, she would ask stuff like that. Like, how do you do it? How do you keep, you know, the balance of everything? And so I would give advice when I could.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have advice, having gone through?
Absolutely.
What is the advice though? Because you've gone through, like, because you broke off of MySpace. Nobody was breaking on social media before MySpace, right?
Yeah.
So you've kind of had to deal with every version, every platform. So you've seen it all.
Yeah. And you know what? It's hard to grow with all these new platforms. There's a lot of upkeep, and everyone has their different they're different ways, and you have to learn it all. I have a team that's helping me with it, because I think it's too much to just do on my own. But I think for giving advice to artists, since I was young when I started it, I think there was a lot of things I was learning, who I was. I was, you know, you have to say yes to mostly everything, but at a certain point you need to start saying no to stuff, and you need to know what boundaries you have. And it's really hard to know what find that balance of, like, you know what, I do need to grow here and be open-minded, but also, no, this is not, I don't want to do that. I don't want to associate with that, or that is not who I am as an artist. And it can be challenging when you have a lot of people on your team that are encouraging you to be something different. And sometimes that's good, and sometimes it's wrong. So I think that, and still hanging with your family and friends and having downtime, staying healthy, all of it.
Who encouraged you to do something that wasn't right? Would it be like more tour dates than you wanted to do, or like record a type of style that you weren't into? Like, what would someone push you to do that you didn't feel comfortable about?
For me, when I was so new, like, I was from Southern California, I didn't really wear makeup, I didn't know anything about, like, fashion, I wasn't known as sexy, and these were things that, as a female at that time, it was really important to be molded that way. So I started getting, you know, encouragement to lose weight, to have, you know, stylists and wear more high heels and wear sexier clothes and all these things that, there's nothing wrong with those things, but they didn't feel right to me at that time. And so I think for me, I felt like I it made me even more insecure and even more terrified to perform on TV or in front of an audience, because I felt like I had people wanting me to be someone different. And the more I've actually learned with my career, the more open I am about who I am and my insecurities, my fans love that. And I feel like if I had known to stick to my guns more earlier on, I would have felt better in my career and engaged with my fans better.
Yeah. How would you have known how to do that though, when everyone's coming to you and you're like, you're so green in this, even though you grew up in the industry basically, but still, it's
not
different.
Like that.
It's different to be an artist who has, you know, one of the biggest songs in the world at the time.
Yeah, I think that it's just something that, you know, some people are stronger at that early age and, like, they know themselves more. And I think that I'm probably also a people pleaser, and also just, like, maybe they are right. Maybe I do need to. And a lot of times they were right. I did need to grow in a lot of areas. Sorry, this
the
Nashville winter. I'm like,
it's getting to all of us.
But yeah, so that's what I mean, where you have to kind of sit with it for a minute and be like, yeah, you know what? I can grow there, or nope, this is me and I'm sticking with it.
But you've had the same manager for your entire career.
I have.
Basically. So what does he do right? Like, like, everyone's pushing you in a million directions at this point in your career. You're looking back and you're like, screw all these people. I should have done it my way. But your manager did something right to hang with you this entire time.
Yeah, you know, we're like family, and I think he's known that balance of when to push me a little bit and help encourage me to grow and expand and experience new things. And then also he'll be like, yeah, no, that's not you. You're right. Like, you know, it's up to you. You can say yes or no, but, like, if you say no, I totally understand. So I feel like I've had that support from him, and I really can lean on his advice and trust that he knows what's best for me and my career.
And you teamed up with him early?
Yeah, my dad introduced me to him. So my manager, Chad, and my dad's old business partner, Leo, they worked together. And Leo recommended Chad to my dad. And so we met with him. He lived like close to my hometown. And so, yeah, since I was 20, I've known him.
And he's been managing
the entire time.
The entire time.
Yeah.
It's crazy. No, yeah. It never works out like that.
That's what I hear. I'm always so surprised. Yeah. Everyone's had a million managers. And I mean, I've you know, my team has changed out a ton, but like I still have the same
the one
manager, attorney. I'm still with a lot of the same, you know. I'm sorry, my throat.
Oh,
is
my God. No, you sound great.
I don't know what's happening.
No, you sound great. a manager is kind of like a therapist. Where you just need them to know your entire life story.
Yeah.
So that you can make quick decisions and they know where you're at, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like somebody could come in, but then they don't know what you did 10 years ago. They don't know, like, they have to learn everything about you.
He remembers more than I do.
Yeah.
He's like, remember this show you did in this country with this? I'm like, I don't at all. I literally don't remember. There was like, it was a whirlwind back then.
Yeah. I was watching this other clip of you in the studio recording Breathe with Taylor Swift. There's like a two-part miniseries about this.
Yeah.
I felt in this clip that she was idolizing you. She was looking up to you, maybe in like a big sister role.
Yeah.
In this, the fact that this clip exists is insane. Like, it's almost unbelievable. But did you feel that energy? Did you feel like she was really trying to impress you at that point? Or it felt like she was so excited that you were in the studio with her.
She was. And you know what? It was a couple of things. She was so sincere and complimentary and excited and all of that. And then she was also this just brilliant, strong young woman that I had like a taken back by, because I was like, wow, this is really impressive to watch, to see this woman who knows who she is, knows what she wants to sound like, what she wants to say. And she was the leader of her team. It was really impressive.
She was saying in the song, I didn't realize this, but in the song she says to you when you're recording it, she says, okay, do this at the end. I just want you to riff on I'm Sorry. She's like, just riff on that. And I'm watching this video and I go, that's the dumbest idea ever. And then I go, because it just sounds so silly. And then I go, is that on the song? I couldn't remember. So I listened back and it's on the song. And in the context of the song, oh my God, it's brilliant. Like it fits so
what,
well.
I'm just like riffing like vocally. Just
both
like,
of you and her at the end are saying like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
It just seems like, it seems like it wouldn't. I like if in the video I go, that can't be a good idea. And I listen back, I go, oh my God, it's a great idea. It fits perfectly in there. Like, I guess you didn't think that at all. You thought, great, we'll do that at the end. I'll sing that harmony. I'll just riff on it.
Yeah, because that's what singing is. It's so fun to get to that. Once you get to the end of the song, you can just vamp out and do harmonies and do background vocals and any kind of anything you want. So that's where you get to play around with the songs and have some fun.
Yeah. She was orchestrating everything, though. Was she like telling you every harmony to sing in that session or no? It was like,
no,
it was you just kind of went in and did it.
Yeah, I mean, well, I love harmonies are like my favorite thing ever. But I'm pretty sure we, you know, in the room when we were writing, we knew what part I was going to sing. And also when you're in the studio, you can try different harmonies or in different sections. But you know, I don't remember entirely how everything went.
Yeah,
yeah.
When you went in to re-record the vocal for her album version,
yeah.
What I understand about this process is, do you think? I mean, I've been listening to your new record. And I think you kind of sound, you know, maybe your voice hasn't changed that much, but I feel like over 15 years, give or take, has your voice changed, do you think?
Yeah.
Or do you think it's similar?
I think there's similarities, but I think my voice has gotten stronger as it would. When I listen back, I'm like, oh my God, you sound like a baby. Like I was so young and I didn't entirely know how well to use my voice at that time and hit certain notes and all the things, like different inflections. And now I feel like, you know, after years of touring and knowing how to sing properly, I feel like it's different and I think I can hear it in my music.
So when you went in to do that re-record, were you thinking about doing an impression of the way you sounded when you first recorded it? Or did you think about, I'm just going to sing it the way I would sing it today?
I just sang
it. That's it, basically.
I just sang it as I sang it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, what's cool about, I mean, her music too is like it. You sound similar, even though you can sound a little more matured, but it still sounds the same.
Sounds the same, yeah. The new record's out, Along the Way, which is your first country record. mm-hmm. right now. A lot of songs on this record with Liz Rose.
Yes.
Why is Liz Rose the best? Like, what are we, like, like when you meet Liz Rose, she might be the most unassuming rock star of all time.
She's a total rock star.
Why, what is Liz Rose doing in the room that is working? Like, why do we keep going back to Liz Rose?
She is, she's truly like a therapist, like a friend, like a family member, someone that you feel comfortable and safe around, that you can, she'll be like, all right, tell me what's going on. Like, let's hear it. And you feel like you can share everything with her. And then she'll, you know, I would have an idea for a song and her and AJ were just so great. They were the perfect team to write most of this album with. And she would always have these brilliant twists to the, whatever I wanted to say. And then she'd have this really beautiful, clever way of saying it, this really amazing line. And so it's, she really is smart and she's a wise woman. She gives so much great advice and she really is just a beautiful, epic songwriter.
So do you bring in this idea like Worth It, for example? Like who comes up with the idea like, hey, let's just call a song Worth It. Like, yeah. and let's figure out a twist. And then does she come up with say, oh, it could be like this. You know, it wasn't perfect, but it was worth it. Like, is that what Liz Rose is doing in the room?
Every song is different, and we all add different parts, different melodies, different lyrics. So when I went in, that was the first song we all wrote together. Was Worth It. And I was telling them what I was experiencing in my breakup and how it was really important for me to share how much I cherish and love this person and all the beautiful things that we had. And AJ had, he was like, you know, that kind of reminds me of this idea that I just started and it was Worth It and it was part of the chorus. And I was like,
which part was the chorus? Like, which part did he have?
I know it wasn't perfect, but loving you was worth it.
That was all he had. He sings that, or he says that.
I don't know the extent of it, but yes, he definitely had a portion of the chorus. And we were like, oh my God, are you kidding me? That's beautiful and perfect, no pun intended. And so then that we were off to the races. It was just like, I knew they understood me. That was my first time working with AJ. Liz had recommended he come in and write with us. And so after that, every time I had something I wanted to say and express, I would call them and I'd be like, all right, guys, I got more to say. And we would turn it into a song.
And how quickly do you get in with them? Like, you call them up, you say, I have an idea, let's go.
Well, at that time, it was during the pandemic.
So everyone had free time, basically.
Everyone had free time. I still feel like Liz and AJ, like, everyone books up so far in advance in Nashville. Yeah. It's kind of wild. But I still feel like we're in a place where if they have free time and I want to get on the books quick, that we can, we'll make it happen.
When you're Colby Calais, people just...
It's not that. It's great when you have that bond with them and you love writing together. I don't love writing with everyone. And that's why I was very selective of who I wrote with for this record.
Is it a vibe thing or is it just like the material you get?
Both. Or, you know, a vibe. And this was a very emotional record. And I wanted to feel, I didn't want to book a ton of writing sessions, which I've done before, which is really great. And that's what I admire about people in Nashville, like the writers in Nashville. They write all the time. And the quality is so good. It's so impressive to me. But this record, I really didn't want to have a ton of options. I really only wanted to write when I had something I wanted to say and we would execute it then. Because normally you write like 60 songs and then you narrow it down. Everyone's talented. It's not even about that. It's really that who would understand like the stories I wanted to say and be very therapeutic.
I think that if I was a songwriter, I'm the kind of personality where if I had to wait for lightning to strike, I would never write a song because I would never think that's lightning. Or I wouldn't think that's a good idea. I'm telling you, if I was a songwriter, I would think I'd have to just write every day and hope I get lightning in a bottle.
Well, and there's something about that too. Just like, you know, when you work at something, like your craft is really polished. And so I will say that, like, it took me a long time to make this album. I really wrote, I wrote like 8 songs. That's nothing. People write
the whole, not for the album, like total.
Total.
Yeah.
Ever. Like, and they were on the album, but like people write 2 songs a day in Nashville for 5 days a week.
For you, does that feel artistically satisfying? Like you're filling the bottle and you're like, okay, like I'm checking that artistic box I need to check. Or are you stressing out? Like maybe I should be writing more songs or maybe I should be doing something else for this record. Everyone's counting.
I only stress out because everyone else is like, when are you going to keep writing? Or why don't you write with this person? And
Who says that? Like, does your manager
say that? My manager and my team.
He needs the record to come out. Like, he's counting on
it. Well, and that's where I can be lazy at times, where I'm just like, well, no, I don't feel like writing right now. I don't know what I want to say. And but that's also not how things work. Sometimes you have to force yourself to get out of your comfort zone. And I've done that. And I've written so many amazing songs by doing so. And I will do that again. But for this record, I specifically refused to do that. It was a time in the world where I could. I had time. People were, taking their time and breathing space. And it was really good.
So basically, you're like, you have a record on the horizon. You're kind of running around doing your thing. You're touring. You're living life. You're walking your dogs. And then all of a sudden, you have an idea for a song and you go, we got to get in the room with Liz Rose. Like, is that how this kind of happens?
Yeah.
Is that the process?
Yeah. So my song Meant for Me on the record.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorites. And I was dating this guy and the relationship ended. And I was like, gosh, I was so... like, he was meant for me, even though we're not together. Like, I learned this from him. I had this great experience. Like, I found all the great reasons of why he was meant to be in my life. And I was like, but he was not meant for me. So that's kind of a weird thing. How do I say this? And so I told them I had this idea. And then Liz had the beautiful twist of Meant for Me to Lose. And I was like, that's exactly what I wanted to say, and I didn't know how to say it.
That's it. So every song that's on this record, did any songs get cut, or every song you wrote, basically, you wrote for this record?
Yes. So I wrote 16 songs for the record, and 13 made it. And I thought about putting the other ones on there, but I felt like they were later on in the writing, and I just didn't feel like it was a part of, this exact message I wanted to say for a long
time. Some of these albums are too long these days. Some of these records that are being put out in country music, 40 songs.
40, that's a lot. It is too much. But I will say Morgan Wallen's double albums.
Yeah.
And during the pandemic, when the first one came out, I was in love. And I still am. Like, every single song I would listen to. We'd have to drive to Memphis for a bunch of times. And I would just put the double album on repeat. So there's a time and a place for it.
There's a time and a place for the double album. But you felt like, I'm going to edit myself. 13 songs. These are the best 13.
Yeah.
That I have. That's all you need for a record. That's a project.
I'll be releasing more music next year. But yeah, for this is what it was.
Do we feel like we have those songs for next year, or we're writing them right now?
I have a lot of different projects for next year.
Really? Like what? Give me the exclusive.
I don't know if I'm even allowed to say it.
Boss? Who cares? What is there going to be another country record? Or we don't know.
Probably.
There's got to be.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, this record I made is my favorite I've written and recorded, and I would like to keep making records that sound like it.
Why is this the sound, right?
It's just the quality. My producer, Jamie Kenny,
Who is this guy? Because this guy is like, is he new on? He's not new on the scene.
No, he's
Who
been
is
around.
He?
He's been in Nashville for a long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
When I was in my band Gone West, we wrote with him, and he produced a couple songs on the record. And I loved working with him. He's one of my closest friends. So I was like, dude, I want to work with Jamie for this record. We're going to do the whole thing together. And he just knows the quality of music and got these incredible Nashville musicians, and we were in a studio here for a couple weeks together, and then we took our time with it, for a year, just adding things and doing my vocals in time. And his ear is incredible, and his style of music is so diverse, and his production, that he really got it. That's the thing I'm so grateful for. My team understood it, the writers, and then Jamie as the producer.
When you get Sheryl Crow on one of these songs, is that do you feel like that's a big get? Or have you been in this business so long that you're like, of course Sheryl Crow's going to be on my album?
Oh my God. So
that's like,
I asked her a few years ago, actually it was right before the pandemic, and I was like, I'm going to do a record, and would you please do a song with me? I would love it. And she said yes. And I was like, oh my God, Sheryl Crow said yes. Like, we were friends, and I went on tour with her years ago, but you never know if she'll say yes or not. And then I took 3 years to make the record. And so only a few months ago, I reached out again and I asked her if she still was interested. And she said yes, which I was really grateful for and honored. And so we recorded it pretty quick. But she is someone I just love so much.
Yeah, she's unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
How pro is she in the studio? She comes and she just bangs it out.
She does. And she's like, there's no ego. She's straight up just like, what would you like this to sound like? Are you sure this is good enough? Like, she's just so sweet. There was, it was just sweet and calm. And, yeah, she was, I wasn't surprised because I had toured with her and I knew she was like that, but, working with her in the studio, you just never know how people can be. And she was just professional and sweet.
Yeah. When you were in the studio in this clip that I was referencing earlier with Taylor, at the end of the clip, she goes into the room and she goes, oh my God, she wasn't looking at the lyrics. And Taylor was like freaking out about this. Do you feel like you have a good memory for song lyrics?
No, it's not at all.
No?
Not at all.
But that day, you knew the lyrics to that song?
Yeah, or for that section, or who knows? Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Some songs I remember really well, but others I'm like, for the life of me, I can't figure out.
Really?
Like, shouldn't be that hard.
Even your own songs, like, do you forget the lyrics live?
You know, yeah, and my song Meant For Me, for some reason, because of how the lyrics are, I mix up every line, and
really?
I'm like, I don't know how I can do this live. And I've done it a couple times live, and I think I only messed up one line, but every line, I'm like, what is it? Okay, I got it. And
are you serious?
I'm terrified. I don't know why.
Can you put a teleprompter on stage or something? Or that feels so corny.
I could, but when I do, I end up looking. I look down the whole time. So I try to just like practice it, and it's like the national anthem. I've done it 1,000 times. I know the song by heart, but the second you are live on TV, I'm like, oh my God, how does the song go? Like, your brain kind of goes blank for certain things.
Yeah. What do you do? Do you feel like you have a stock, or maybe not stock, but you have a standard arrangement that when you get called to do the national anthem, you just go to the, like, you've got your thing?
I do.
And do you spend a lot of time working on it, or how'd you come up with it?
Me and Justin Young, my fiance at the time, we, you know, he's from Hawaii, I'm from California. I love that, like, beachy kind of reggae feel. And we didn't take it to that extreme, but it is definitely like this very relaxed acoustic guitar driven version of the national anthem. So that's how I do it. And people seem to, you know, you never know if people are going to be upset. It's not too different. So, you know, you keep it pretty close, but it's a song that, you know, I enjoy singing it this way.
And how, like, if you were doing it tomorrow night or tonight, would you then get out of here and go run it 100 times to do it?
Yeah. And I would still be like,
oh yeah. Freaking out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Have you ever screwed it up, or no, you can't? We know about it. If you did, it'd be everywhere.
I have not, luckily, I have not messed up the lyrics. I think my voice has cracked a couple times that I was really not happy about. It wasn't crazy bad, but it, you know, you practice and you do it so good when you're practicing, and then the nerves kick in. And
Yeah. You've talked a lot about having stage fright early in your career. And you even, I've heard you say in interviews that you had, like, somebody brought a performance coach in to help you with it.
Mm-hmm.
Does the performance coach say anything that's actually helpful, or is the only way to get over stage fright is just to perform a lot? Like, what does a performance coach say?
Oh, well, she helped me a ton, first of all. Like, I would stand there. I wouldn't move on stage. I would sing with my eyes closed. I wouldn't talk to the audience. I knew nothing. So she really opened me up and had me move around and engage with the audience. And I'm not joking. I had her talking in my ears for the first maybe year. So she toured the world with us. Like, I was so new, and so, like, that's why I think people think I might just, it was bad. The stage fright was really bad. So she was helping me because I really just didn't know how to talk to the audience, and I didn't know what to say. And then once I did, I started feeling comfortable. And then once I wrote my song Try, and I started just being vulnerable with the audience and, like, telling them my thoughts, telling them, oh, I messed up, or, oh my gosh, you know what, I'm really, like, I have social anxiety and I'm an introvert. This doesn't feel like natural for me to be on stage. They would laugh and they would think it was great. And then my guard would come down, and I would tell stories between every song. And so now that's what I've found. So the combination of me, like, learning myself and learning to share with the audience, and then the stage coach, Nancy, for so many years, just helping me get out of my shell, that combination was essential.
Yeah. And then right before you go on stage, like, if I go on stage, I'm usually meditating before, like, right before I go on stage. Like, when I tour, I'll usually be in the green room, like, meditating.
Okay.
And everyone thinks I'm, like, taking a nap. But I find it just makes it like,
well, you're centering and you're
centering.
I think that's great.
But like, do you do anything like that or no? Maybe I'm crazy. I don't know.
Oh yeah. I don't meditate, which I should be doing though.
I don't know. Maybe not.
No. I think that would be absolutely
whatever
beneficial.
Works. Yeah. Yeah.
But I do like a quiet before I go on stage. Like a lot of times you have people coming in and it can really make me a little anxious, and I go over my set list and I go through my talking points. So I just know what's coming next and how to share this naturally with the audience. And you do your warm-ups and stretches, and I really just like to sit there in quiet. And so I have my own version of that and centering, but not technically meditating.
Will you actually stretch before you go on? Like, will you do like a child's pose or whatever? Maybe not.
Yeah.
That.
Well,
but
no,
you'll do
not,
some like.
Yeah, I'll do all the stretches just to feel like, you know, again, loose and just comfortable, relaxed. I remember, I'm like, you're supposed to have fun. This isn't a scary thing. Like, this is your show. You get to go sing and talk to people. So I have to remind myself of that every time.
Yeah. Do you feel like I feel like you tour, you probably tour a pretty comfortable amount, right? Or you don't?
I don't tour enough.
Really?
Team would say yes. I'm not a. I don't love all the travel and touring, but I do love the shows and I love seeing my fans and going to different cities. But I don't like long packed in tours. But you tour, right? You tour a lot, and also you play bass. Is that?
I play a little bit of bass.
You play a little bass.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I feel like every guitar player can kind of play a little bass, which is so offensive. So offensive to bass players. To think that. I toured a lot last year. This year I'm touring less. Okay. I play a little bit, yeah.
And you love it?
Yeah, I love to play. Love to be on stage, though.
Okay.
Like, I live for it.
Okay.
To play guitar.
I wish I had that.
But you know what it is? Like, I feel like the difference is, like, I feel like I'm so not emotionally tapped in to write a song. And maybe if I was, I would maybe feel different about being, like, I feel like the emotional intelligence you might need to be able to write a great song that I don't really seem to have, I guess.
You don't write songs?
No. I wrote 35 songs once for a college class.
Once. Okay.
Yeah. The only requirement in this class was to write 35 songs. And if you did, you would get an A. And
really?
That was the class.
That's a lot of songs. In what amount of time?
12 weeks.
Okay.
12 weeks, 35 songs. And he broke it down on a syllabus. He said, if you want an A, write like 35 songs. If you want a B, write.
Did it matter how long they were or how good
they were?
No,
this was his thing. He was like, I'm going to just listen to them for a second to make sure the audio is there. He's like, I'm not going to critique them.
Huh.
I'm just going to. His whole thing was like that there's that idea that, you know, there's these two classes of people. This was like a real study where they told one class to make like one pot and they were going to be judged on the quality of the pot. And then they told another group to just make the endless pots and they were going to be judged on the amount of pots.
Okay.
And the group that made more pots, each pot was on its own better than the one individual pot.
Okay.
Somewhere you can look this up. I just butchered that explanation of what that was.
Okay.
But that was his whole theory. He was like, just write songs.
Were there any good ones in that batch of 35?
No, they were horrible. Anyway, the point is, I wrote the 35 songs. I think they were like little riff things with like, they were probably all like 12 bar blueses or whatever. Like, I was like trying to fake this. I wrote 35 songs for the class. Never written a song since.
Kind of. I haven't written honestly for like maybe a year.
But do you get this urge to write at sometimes? Like that's never happened to me ever. I've never had that urge.
Okay. Well, I mean, I occasionally do, but it's like I said, it's very rare. And if people ask me to write, I'm like, I get anxiety because it's not that I don't want to write with them. It's like I don't feel like I have something to write about right now. And I definitely, if I'm experiencing life and I'm feeling like I have a lot of inspiration and motivation, then I'll be like, or I'll be playing my guitar and something will come out, or I'll play my piano in my living room and I'm like, I get an idea and then I'm like, oh, it's back. But it's not always there.
See, to me, that's so interesting. Would you ever do an outside cut?
I don't know. I love connecting to the songs that I write because it's therapeutic for me as the writer. And then I love, my favorite part about it is when my audience can say how much my song has been a part of their life in some way. So that's the hard part, is there are so many great songs out there that I could sing and use, but I don't feel that connection to it. But I'm not like, it's not a hard no, but I've never done it yet.
Yeah. Is it a blessing to have so many songs, have had these songs earlier in your career that were such massive hits? people are going to want to hear Bubbly and, you know, Lucky, and like, people are going to want to hear these songs forever. So it doesn't matter what you do, you're going to have a career touring and playing music for people, and people are going to come out for you.
Well, thanks for saying that.
I mean, come on. It's totally true. Is there almost like a reassurance to that, or is it almost comfortable that like, I'm going to put out a country record and I really hope people love it, but they're still going to come out to hear Bubbly and Lucky, and then maybe I could play these country songs. Like, maybe that's reassuring.
There is some reassurance for sure, because you do, I forget that my songs are still playing on the radio and people are listening to them. Like, that's what's cool about streaming, is you get to know how many people, how often they're streaming, what song, all of that. Like, it's a really great reminder, because when I'm just home in my own world, I forget that people are listening to me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can't just get complacent and expect people are always going to want to listen to you, because there's always new artists and new songs. And so you do have to keep yourself out there and kind of nurture that relationship with your fans and your artistry.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I think these songs are so embedded in the culture. Like, they're, especially if you grew up with them, no one's forgetting these songs that you had. Right? Like, do you feel that, or do you still feel like I have to remind people how good these songs are and continue to be?
No, well, yeah, like, I think, like you're saying, they kind of remind me. I'm like, you're still listening to that? That's so cool. Like, and like, parents are playing it to their kids, and then these kids are being raised with my music. I think that's very special.
No, it makes sense. CMA Awards are next week.
Yeah.
Did you do the CMA Awards last year?
I did not.
No, you did. Is this your first year doing them with a country record? Well, you did Gone West.
I did with Gone West. Yeah. But this, Solo, yes.
Solo, yes. Yeah. Okay, so what's the, do we have the outfit picked? We must have the outfit picked up.
No, I don't. I have a
thousand
dresses.
This is in like 5 days. We don't know what we're wearing.
This is typical of me for sure. But
you don't have a stylist who's responsible for
I don't have one right now, actually. But I have on this weekend, I'm going to be trying on a bunch of dresses.
This seems so irresponsible. If I was Colby Calais or anyone who's going to be walking the red carpet at the CMA Awards.
Thank you for calling me out. I know.
Why would you not have a stylist?
Well,
this seems so obvious.
To be honest, I found out I was going to go like only a few days ago.
Okay.
So I just started figuring out what I'm wearing and planning all the stuff. So, yes.
Do you feel like you have to wear something that you've never worn in public before?
Yeah, for this, yes. I do rewear my clothes a lot though. But for this, no, you can't just wear same dress.
But you think you have the dress?
I don't know yet, and I will probably be freaking out on Sunday.
So what are you going to do if you don't have it?
I think I'll be fine.
Cuz someone will get it for you. You'll find it.
That's the thing with stylists, you can't really bug them last minute. Everyone in town they're working on all the artists, so everyone's like frantically, but you know, I can online shop, I can go to stores, I can figure some. I have nice dresses in my closet that I have not worn yet. Those are a last resort, but I am not worried. Now, you know what? You're stressing me out and I don't appreciate it.
If you're not worried, I'm not worried. If you're the pro, I've never been on a red carpet. I'll be interviewing on this red carpet. Maybe I'll see you there.
Okay, I'm curious what you'll think of what I end up choosing. Now I'm like,
it's going to be great.
It's
going to be great. Don't be stressed. If you're not stressed, I'm not stressed. I'm easy. I'm easy.
And are you going?
Yeah, I'm going to go. Okay. I'm going to do the red carpet, and then I'm going to be in the media center.
I'll see you there then.
We'll
have a drink.
It'll be great. I don't drink, but
we'll share a drink of
anything.
We'll share a drink of anything.
Yeah. It'll be great. And then I'll be in the media center afterward. And then are you going to go out afterwards to like one of the after parties?
Yeah.
Whose party do you feel like? WME?
There's all of them. I just got told about all of them. So
I
don't know.
Okay.
I don't know the order, but
we'll figure it out.
It's going to be fun.
It's going to be great. I love the CMA Awards.
What are you wearing?
I've got probably a suit for... Okay, so I just ordered a new suit from this guy who's a Hong Kong tailor who lives in Hong Kong, and he travels around the world setting up these appointments to do bespoke suits. So I just got one when I was in New York. And I've friends of mine have like recommended him, are like all in on this guy. So I did this probably 6 months ago. Got the measurements taken.
Planning for this?
No, just because I need a new suit.
Okay.
But in the back of my head, I'm thinking, oh, this will be great for the CMA Awards. I got a great suit, very sharp, kind of a cool pattern. Take the measurements, sends me the suit. And he goes, the first time, it might not fit perfectly because we're trying to figure out the measurements. He's like, I don't know. So get the suit, doesn't fit. Comes back to New York 3 months later. I'm not in New York to meet him.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm stuck with this suit that I can't do anything with.
No.
So now he's coming back to New York on Monday in 3 days.
Are you going?
Yes. I'm flying to New York.
To get it.
This suit's not going to be ready for the CMAs. Oh. Let's be clear. There's no way. Because he then has to take it back to Hong Kong.
What?
To get it adjusted.
He won't have someone else do that
in New
York?
No, it's just him who flies solo.
This doesn't make any sense.
This is a racket. This is ridiculous.
Is this expensive?
No, that's the thing. Oh. It was very reasonable for a bespoke suit. But okay. I still relatively paid a lot of money.
What color is it?
It's a great kind of blue, like checkered pattern suit. Very sharp. And then I got this almost like salmon colored suit that this guy talked me into. I think it's going to be great. Point is, none of this is going to be ready for the CMA Awards.
Great. It's so what are you going to wear?
So I've got another suit that I'll be wearing.
Have you worn it before?
Yeah, I've worn it a couple times. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Just add something new to it to spruce it up a bit.
What I might do, I was at St. Jude a couple weeks ago for their Country Carries Gala, and I wore the suit, but I wore like a black t-shirt underneath it.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying it was a great look. But I don't know if you can go black t-shirt to the CMAs. I feel like you have to go a little more formal.
I do feel like you could. I mean, it is formal, but I feel like the CMAs is pretty...
Country's casual.
Yeah. I mean, like men wear, you know, jeans with button-up... You know, and like nice boots. As long as you accessorize in a cool way.
I got to figure out. I don't know what I'm wearing either. I got to call my stylist. My God, I can't believe it. If I had access to a stylist, I would have them on duty for every event.
I honestly would have, but I was too late when I figured out that I was going, and I didn't want to stress anyone out. So
I would be stressing people out. I'd say, let's go. Let's rock.
It's okay. I'll keep the stress to myself.
It's going to be great. Here's the point. The point is the new record is out now, Along the Way.
Yeah.
It's Colby's debut country album, and every song on this sounds fantastic.
Thank you.
It is such a country album. There's dobro all over it. There's acoustic guitars all over it. This is such a great record to really listen to. It feels like a fall record, too.
Oh, yay.
I feel like it does, right?
Yeah.
Like, this is the season to be listening to this album. Don't miss the window to do it. And she's going to Brazil, and then next year, she'll be touring the States. Mm-hmm. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah. The manager has bills to pay, too. So Colby's got to get on the road and tour the country.
I will.
Where are you playing next year? Do we know?
We don't know yet.
We don't know.
There's going to be some country festivals. Those are happening, but all the other stuff, they're working out right now.
That's the best. When you do the country festivals, and the stages are massive, and then everyone's like there, all the fans are there.
They're so fun. I love getting to tour with great artists. Like, I love doing co-headline tours or opening for, like, I got to open for Cheryl and John Mayer, and, like, to do stuff like that, it's just a really fun tour.
Yeah, if you go open for John Mayer again, are you going to play this country record, or do you think you pull from other songs in your catalog?
Like, I mean, you play all the stuff.
You play everything.
Yeah, I play all the old stuff, all the songs people know, and then some new ones, some cool covers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see, that's what's good about having a catalog, right? You can play anything.
Yeah.
You can go deep with it.
True.
Do you feel like, I've got to ask you this while I still have you. Everyone talks about this, that your dad is a legendary producer, Ken Clay. When you would listen to Rumors by Fleetwood Mac, and all your friends would probably be listening to Rumors too, did you kind of feel like a boss having this like family connection to that album? Like, does that album feel different to you than it does to me?
Yes, it does, because I grew up with it and knowing it. You know, at the time too, growing up, my dad did this in the 70s, and when I was old enough and my friends, you know, no one was like listening to it. It wasn't like the current thing, but it's still a classic that everyone always loves. And so, the fact that that's what I was raised on, and I have stories with meeting them and knowing them at different times in my life, and that it's still one of the best records of all time that people love and are influenced by, like, it's really special to know my dad was a part of that.
I feel like, though, when I went to summer camp, the kids of the owners of the summer camp, untouchable. They were running around all over the place. They were on another planet. Spoiled brats. Yeah. That probably wasn't you, but you don't feel like you have this like thing with that record or maybe all those albums that you're like, I'm like part of this family tree here. I don't know what the connection is, but I would feel some crazy connection to that record.
I do feel a connection, and I feel like I'm so grateful that I got to be close to it in some way, because it really is an incredible record, and that band and their vocals and their writing, like everything about them.
Yeah, makes sense. Okay, the new record is out, Along the Way. Loving You Wasn't Perfect, but it was worth it. Yeah. That's my favorite song on the record. You did a great performance on Fox, by the way. Fox and Friends, I think. I don't know what it was, but I was watching it. Yeah. Bands rocking. I did a show with one of your guitar players.
Oh, yeah?
Too. Yeah, he was filling in for...
Jonathan? Tyler?
Long hair. Who was the long hair?
Jonathan.
Yeah. Yeah, we did a show with him. I think he was filling in for Jesse James Decker, maybe?
Yeah.
Or someone? Yeah. Nice guy.
He's great.
He lugged the whole amp out for me.
Oh, that's his thing. Yeah, so he's like a part of the crew too, but like just because he wants to. So after every show, he helps the crew load out. And
that's
we're like,
the guy you need to be your guitar player.
He is honestly a pure angel. He is like the most wonderful and then just so talented.
How do you find this guy? How do you find a guitar player?
My drummer actually knew him and recommended him. So, and I'm grateful because that's a really hard spot to fill in my band. Acoustic guitar is so prominent and then like a very, very good voice for singing background vocals with me and also duets. So,
I was thinking about this because he said to me, I was like, oh, like, what are you doing? He was like, oh, I play guitar for Colby Calais. And instantly, my first thought was, that's a hard gig.
Yeah.
To play those acoustic guitar parts, which are so exposed.
So exposed.
And he nails them every night.
He does it. And,
like,
there's high harmonies. Like, I feel bad for the guys when they have to sing, like, so high. But he nails it. And I swear, there's only, like, three people that can play that spot, and it's really hard to find someone. So yeah, I wouldn't do it.
If he called me and if he asked me a sub for him, I wouldn't do it. I don't think I could do it.
No,
it's like I just would be so scared to play those parts.
Oh, come on,
they're so exposed. Like, it's just that, and everyone knows that song, so they know the feeling captured.
Yeah. Yeah.
In that recording.
Most of the time I play shows like acoustic, so that it's mostly just me and him. Like, we fly out tomorrow for an acoustic show and it's me and him for an hour. Yeah.
What's the theme of this record? Because this is sort of like a breakup record, but there's some love songs on here too. This record's kind of capturing both ends.
You know, it's a breakup album for sure, but loving and appreciating the person and the times that you shared, being hopeful for what's to come. And also, a lot of the songs are just about me and like learning who I am now at this age, being single and going through what I've experienced. And you know, there can be like angry, mad breakup songs, and this isn't an album for that. This is one where, you know, I've written songs like that for sure before, but this is just one like where you can look back with appreciation and love and like be hopeful for the future.
What would it take for someone for you to go on a date with them? Would a friend have to set you up, or could they come up to you and ask you, could someone approach you cold and be really smooth and go on a date with you? Or do you have to have someone set you up where you have a mutual friend and someone knows them?
I don't know. I'm really not used to like dating and going out on dates. I have been set up before by like mutual friends, and I always feel more comfortable with that because then like they know them and it's not just like I think I've gone on a couple dates with someone I didn't know, and I don't know. But not closing it off, but yeah, it doesn't feel that comfortable, but it's new for me.
Doesn't feel that comfortable to go on out with a total stranger or just in general?
Yeah, total stranger, because you never know. So I'd rather like someone that they've known forever and like you just know that like they know the good things about them. You know everything about them.
And do you feel like someone has to be a certain level of success for you to not feel like they're coming on to your success? Like, they have to have their own level of success in their career in order to not feel like, oh, they're trying to attach to your thing, right?
Yeah, you want a partnership, and it doesn't have to, you know, you're never going to be entirely equal in certain ways, but as long as like you can be there for each other in the ways that you're both needing, I don't know, it's something I'm still figuring out, but
yeah. Have you ever gone on a date with someone and somebody recognizes you on the date and comes up to you and like to ask for a photo or something? Because I think that would make me feel like such a boss. People came up to me, if I was on a date with someone and a fan came up to me, and I don't have any fans, but if somebody did come up to me on a date and like recognized me and asked for a photo, I think it'd be game over.
Yeah. Oh, you'd be stoked on that.
I'd be stoked on that. Maybe that wouldn't be a good look though. Maybe that'd be like annoying.
I think it depends who I was out on the date with, or like, I feel like I would be embarrassed by it, or like it would take certain attention away from things. But I don't know, depending if the person, that's a good thing. If the person could handle it, then I would, that would be a good test.
That would be a test right so, there. Like in yeah. the, I'd have people running around on these dates just coming up to you.
Just setting yeah. it up.
But people don't, you say, I hear this all the time, which doesn't make any sense because I feel like you have such a great distinct look. But people come up to you and they say to you, oh, yeah. you look just like Colby Clay.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you feel like you get that more I than do. People who come up to you and say?
I do. And I think it's so interesting because I don't know how to handle it. I yeah. feel bad because sometimes I don't let them know. I'm just like, I just say thank you or I don't know. But I'm not like, oh, but I am. Like, I don't know. I feel like it's weird to do, even though I probably should. But also, I'm not always rolling around town looking sharp, you know?
Just really? Think,
yeah.
No?
Oh, yeah. I still got that Cali vibe where I'm just like,
by the
hair
way,
back, no makeup.
I was once at... maybe this was a year ago. I don't know when. You're not going to know this. But no, it's great. I was at Never Never.
Yeah, that's Jamie. Jamie owns that. My producer, Jamie.
Producer owns
yeah.
the bar. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you were there too. You probably you're probably there all the time. I didn't know that. But you were in the bar. Everybody in the bar was going, oh my God, that's Colby Clay.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. That's so funny. I think everyone knows what you look like. I think there's just some people are coming up to you and saying, you look just like Colby Clay. But I'm telling you, this whole bar, like, I was going up to order a drink.
Really?
Some stranger was like, check it out. It's Colby Clay over there. I was like, oh, yeah, it is. Cool.
So you should have said hi.
I didn't know you then. Yeah, what would I have said?
I don't say hi to people. Even if I do know them, I'm usually like, eh.
You're normally like, yeah.
I just don't want to bother people.
Isn't that weird? Is it weird that these people, well, do people come up to you and they feel like they know you? Because yeah. they've been listening to your music. And you're like, I don't know who you are. But like, they're like, they think you're friends.
Yeah. I can see that, though. I mean, like, I don't know. People, you don't want to disappoint people either. And it's hard because if you're having a bad day or you're rushing or something, like I know one time or a few times they've asked for a picture and I'll be like, I'm so sorry, I can't right now. I was rushing to something and they get pissed. And you're like, what? Now you're mad at me? Like I wasn't rude to you. I just told you I can't right now, but like, thank you. Yeah. Nice to meet you. And some people get mad. Some people are very understanding. You just never know.
You just never know.
Yeah.
God, it's tricky. Tricky business.
Tricky.
This is a tricky game we're playing, Colby. Here's the point. Tune into the CMAs Wednesday night to see what Colby decides to wear. Yeah. And it could be anything.
It could be anything.
It could be anything.
Yeah.
And the new record is out now. Along the Way, you got to listen to this record. It's a country classic record. She's wearing a cowboy hat on the cover. She's a hat act. She's become a hat act. And if you're in Brazil, she's coming to you, but she's going to be in the States next year touring. Because the manager needs some commission here. He needs to get things going. He needs Colby on the road. But mostly because you just have to spread the music and spread the joy.
Yeah.
And thanks for coming on the show. What's been on set? We left anything out?
No, I think you're great. Fun. I can't wait to see what you wear to the CMAs. I will see you on the red carpet.
Wait till you see. I'm debating if I'm going to do sneakers, like a white common project.
Ooh, I'm gonna wear sneakers. Damn it.
Yeah. Well, I could.
Why
you?
Can't girls wear sneakers?
Is that not? I mean, maybe it's not really cool. I don't know if it's cool when guys do it. I think guys think
you know
it's
what
cool.
The thing is that the heels and you wear a dress and it kind of like gives you that like definition.
That thing. That
yeah.
You need, yeah.
So.
I might do like white common projects, maybe.
But what is that?
Like common projects, it's like a type of shoe.
Okay.
That's like a white shoe. It's like a white suede.
Love
sneaker.
White shoes.
It's basically a sneaker.
Love it. I'm a fan.
Or I might do more of like a boot kind of thing.
What kind of boot?
Maybe like a Chelsea boot or maybe like a more of a dress shoe kind
okay.
of boot.
Do you wear cowboy boots?
No.
No.
You know what? I own two pairs of cowboy boots. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is overtime. We're done. But for the record, I wear two pairs of cowboy. I own two pairs of cowboy boots. First pair I bought, I said, I'm going to wear this all the time.
Yeah.
Never once. Second pair I bought, I said, well, I didn't wear that pair because that was a weird pair. This pair.
You have the excuse of
this
why.
Pair I'm going to wear all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe once, maybe like twice.
They just don't go with your style.
Also, you know, the other thing is I typically wear a slim jean.
Yeah, that's,
and
you can't.
And that's the problem. You then need to own
wider
legs. Wider legs, which I think is ridiculous because then you end up looking like George Strait, who's my hero. Like, I love George Strait, but I don't want to look like him.
Yeah.
Like, I want to look like me. Yeah. Like, you know, so the whole thing is a mess. If I could fit the boots underneath.
Just tuck them in.
The
tuck your jeans in.
No, that's a horrible look, too. Then you look like a tourist downtown. Like, that's not a good look. Like, so you're screwed no matter what you do.
Okay, well.
That's my takeaway. So, sneakers, I think.
Sneakers.
Yeah.
I agree with that choice.
Great. We'll see you there. Colby Clay on the podcast. We did it. We wrapped.
Thank you, Zach.
We're done. We did it.
That was fun.
Excellent.